Thank you for downloading and listening to this podcast. For more podcasts, including exclusive interviews and roundtable chats, please visit runthinkshootlive.com/listen.
Until I'd played the replay experience experiment, also known as the tree, I felt that episode one was kind of like the black sheep of the family, the one that wasn't so good. But when I did play that event, I realized that Urban Fight, which is the name of the chapter, after you come out of the underground car park, was an absolute stonker of a chapter. And it was based around different areas of the city. Obviously, the name gave it the theme. And I'd always wanted to run a competition based around the streets, either of City 17 or of any city. And recently I did that. And as you have probably played, it's called City Streetsville. And here to talk about it are Don, Darren and Joseph. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello. What's up?
Hello. So let's start with Don. Hi, Don. How are you?
I am pretty good this morning. How are you?
Yeah, good. Yeah, I keep forgetting you're always in the morning for us. Thank you for waking up early on a weekend.
No
have you been working hard? Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
I just have my coffee here to help me wake up.
So. Okay, coffee man. Have you been working hard on any mods that you're about to release or anything?
I wouldn't say about to release, but yes, I've been working on one. So.
One but day, we're going to get you.
Yeah, hopefully this this spring or so I'm aiming for.
Okay, so Valve time, spring. All right, good. And also there's Darren, custom gamer, video man. What have you been making this week?
This week I've been making a new PC.
Oh, have you?
It. Yeah, I just finished it yesterday. There's a couple of teething issues, as you may have noticed earlier, but it's all good now, yeah.
So that's what we're using now, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much.
How big is your monitor?
I didn't actually upgrade the monitor, just upgraded motherboard, CPU and other bits inside.
Right, okay. You're a tinkerer. You like to tinker, do you?
I do like to tinker, yes.
Okay, good. And also joining us today is Joseph Williams, a.k.a. Disprogue. Hi, Joseph.
Hello.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing okay, thanks.
Good. First time on the show. So looking forward to putting those two old boys in their place, yes?
Maybe. I'll see how I do.
All right. Well, you're on because you made one of the entries, and I just want to be clear from the beginning. Don't think we're going to take it easy on you just because you're with us today.
No, I wouldn't expect you to.
Good. Okay, so City Streetsville. As I said in the introduction, my thought was really hoping that mappers would be able to build quite a lot in a short space of time, because not being a mapper, I'm not really sure how things take and how long they should take. But the streets idea seemed to be one that we could get quite a lot of games going in there, and I think we did get quite a lot of action in most of them. Joseph, why don't you start by telling me what was your initial reaction when you first saw the announcement for the theme?
Being quite a new mapper, I was a bit intimidated because I haven't done skyboxes before, so I thought City Streets are going to need skyboxes. Turns out it doesn't really, but I found a way around doing skyboxes by just keeping it less detailed.
Okay. Why don't you tell the listeners what a skybox is?
Oh, yeah. A skybox is basically the... Oh, it's a box. It's a box outside the map which helps to render the sky on a smaller scale. So you put a bunch of small models in the skybox, and it's what's displayed on the skybox texture around the map.
All right. So you've got a big box, and the map's inside, and the inside of the box is a texture to look like the sky.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the other mappers can explain it better, because
it's basically just the backdrop for the level. When you look up, you see the skybox in the sky above you, and whatever you put in the skybox is shown in the map. So it gives you a great kind of depth to the level. You can put like houses and, you know, rows of houses and all kinds of stuff in the skybox to make it look like it's a bigger level than it actually is, basically.
Right. Okay. So when you play those maps with the picture of the cat in the sky, that's a skybox.
Exactly. Yep.
Or cat box, actually. It's a cat box. There we go.
Well, I think a prime example would be the Citadel as far as placing something in the skybox, right? When you see the tall Citadel in the distance, that's a part of the skybox. And then, of course, the clouds and everything behind it are also a skybox. So.
So it's not just one texture then. It's a bit more complicated than that.
Right, you can place other things, generally buildings or hills or mountains, sort of anything you want in the distance that the player can't get to, but you want to flesh out the environment visually.
Okay. So this was a new area for you, Joseph?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't delve into it for this competition. Obviously, I ended up designing it specifically to avoid doing skyboxes. Yeah, I marked it up on the project I am working on.
All right, okay. So, I mean, were you excited or just apprehensive?
I was quite excited to give it a go. And, you know, like I said, I was working on a project at the time which had come to a natural break. So I was looking for something to kind of distract from that.
Okay. So my announcement was just like perfectly timed for you, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, good. Darren, what were your thoughts? Did you think of entering?
Not really. Actually, to be honest, when I saw the theme, I wasn't really that excited about it.
Uh-huh.
I was just thinking kind of in my head, like, streets, wandering around. Yeah, I've done that in Half-Life 2 and Episode 1. Can't really think of anything interesting to do.
Okay.
I love being proved wrong, though, because there was such a variety of levels in the final release. So
yeah, there was.
I was actually pleasantly surprised.
All right, good. All right, and Dom, what do you think when you first heard about it?
Well, I thought it was a pretty good idea, thinking back to, you know, Half-Life 2 directly, and then Half-Life, the Episode 1 section that you were talking about, were pretty good examples. I was a little bit worried about not getting that many entries, because often you think of city streets, you think of wide open, you know, sort of sprawling maps, but... we ended up getting a pretty good mixture of sort of tight spaces and large open street maps. And you should be pretty pleased with the idea, I think, Philip. You got a good turnout.
Yeah, I am. I've been trying to take advice from some mappers. Everybody and his dog, and his head crab even, have got ideas about what the competition should be. And I mean, recently, over the last year or so, people have been saying, It should be enemies or it should be locations. Don't try and get too clever. So this was obviously a location. And yeah, I'm very pleased, I have to admit. I mean, I was really worried the day before. Not enough people had sort of said that they were going to make one, and a few people had said, I'm not going to finish in time. So I was like, oh my God, if I get like two entries, it's going to be really depressing. But, you know, nine is like fantastic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty good. All right, so let's start with them. So the first one we have in the list is Avenue Odessa by Jason Gimba. Don, why don't you sort of take us through your feelings about this particular one?
All right, this ended up being one of the top maps, in my opinion. It's you know, Jason has entered a few of the competitions before, and actually did one of the bonus maps. I think it was for Combinationville, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're a pretty experienced mapper here, and you know, this is the one where the Colonel Cubbage is there, and he's kind of leading you through the streets. and it's, you know, it's a nice dash of kind of silly humor thrown in, especially at the end with the Strider. But I thought the meat of it, the combat of it, you know, was really solid. I thought the design was nice. You know, as soon as you start the map, it opens the doors and you see the Episode 1 view, right? You see the Citadel,
yep,
with the red sky and sort of the maelstrom swirling around the top. And I thought that was a fantastic way to open the map. I was really pleased with this one. I thought it was, you know, well-balanced. I could have used a little more health at the very end with the Hunter showdown. But, yeah, no, I really like this one overall.
He's got a great palette of colors. He manages to use the colors, you know, well. I don't know if that's like a stupid thing to say as a non-mapper, but this reminds me, the opening very much reminds me of Sebastian, which was one of his maps, which is one of the top downloaded maps from Run, Think, Shoot, Live. Maybe like the second or third. It's got like 11,000 downloads or something.
Oh, I hadn't played that one.
Oh, you should. It's a great piece of work. I found it a little bit hard at first.
Yeah.
One of the criticisms I leveled was the fact that the sniper wasn't killing the zombies, but actually he responded in the comments and said, well, it's not, as a sniper, it's not in his interest to kill the zombies. The zombies, you know, draw you out from your cover. And it was like, yeah, it's true.
Yeah. You know, although that wasn't the way we saw things in Half-Life 2, for example. You know, we saw the sniper. That was kind of the way you were warned about the sniper, wasn't he? Shooting a bird, yep. Or shooting a zombie. But yeah, I get his point too. But yeah, that frustrated me as well. That I kind of waited for the zombies to get across to me, and I had to kill him myself. I mean, come on.
Yeah, come on. That's what he's there for. Joseph, what were your thoughts?
I mean, again, it's a beautiful map, and it's fun to play. Yeah, I think generally around the sniper was a bit, maybe a little bit muddy, a bit harder to understand what was going on, because also the sniper came down out of his hole, and I didn't realise that until a bit later.
Okay. All right. And Darren?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one as well. It was one of my favourites. Really nice to look at. Like you said, Philip, the colours were really nice. I think they had some great HDR and fog settings in the map, which really brought everything to life. Yeah, the sniper was a bit weird. I think all it would have really needed was, like, perhaps Cubbage says something like, this sniper's clever, he's not shooting the zombies. Just something like that.
Good idea. Good
and
point.
It would just be, it would be fine. That's all you need for the player to think, okay, this sniper's behaving differently. And now I can plan around that.
Yeah.
But
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't have too much trouble with the ending, actually. I see all the hunters coming in, and I thought it could be pretty bad, but I managed to save all my SMG grenades and things like that, so it wasn't too bad.
I think I died quite a few times. Anybody who watched me on the live stream would be, you know, spilling their coffee laughing at me, but it was a well-set-up situation,
yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah.
What he does very well is he tells a story every single time, so that it's like completely finished. You're not left wondering what's going to happen. It's all done.
Yeah.
You come out the doors, you talk to him, you kill the sniper, you kill the hunters, you get on the train, end of story. It's like really, really
I do have to say, though, something extremely negative I found with this map was that I carried the gnome all the way to the end and nothing happened.
I mentioned that at the beginning of my stream. I sort of said, oh, there's a gnome, wonder if I should carry him, but then I kind of got killed, and it's kind of one of those things that maybe you shouldn't put a gnome in there unless
it's got a lot of baggage attached to it, that model.
Yeah, it has. Gnomeville, that would be a terrible one.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, and moving on, we have Joseph's entry, which is Beneath the Overpass. Joseph, explain yourself.
Well, I mean, for me, the target of the map was mainly to try some things out with the AI, because in previous maps, I kind of just plunked a load of AI in one place and let them do their own thing. Mm-hmm. So, I've been playing around with AI a bit, and just to keep it simple, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
So talk us through the process. I mean, did you start where the player starts, or did you, you know, finish or start with what you thought was going to be the finale and then work around that? How did you do it?
I started around the centerpiece. So started with the overpass itself. Started beneath the overpass, so pillars and everything. And then I just had I knew I had to have an objective, so I chose a random combine prop, which happened to be the advisor sort of pod thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of built a bit of a story around that. And then I just made that into a loop. Because it's a fairly easy layout to do.
Okay, all right. And what made you decide to use the hopper mines as the main weapon against the tank? Is that something you'd always wanted to do?
Well, I mean, I think I was somewhat inspired by in one shoot the film. There's I think it was Estimir's map where mm-hmm. there's a bunch of mines around that, and I thought that was where that was going with. In that map.
Okay. And, all right. Yeah, sorry, Darren, say that again.
I was thinking I had the same idea in Estimir's map as well, but I couldn't quite reach the mines with the gravity gun.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I mean, that was the mines around the tank, right? Sort of beneath you, wasn't it?
Yeah. In that map, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, true. And you, okay, yeah, from the, you were on the top of the building,
yeah,
shooting down at it, and I thought that you were supposed to use the mines as well at first.
I mean, I even tried shooting them with a shotgun in my playthrough.
Okay, yeah, I think I might have tried that as well. It's not an unreasonable thought that they would explode if fired on, would it? I mean, all right, so...
But yeah, I've gone off topic.
It's okay. All right, imagine I said to you, okay, I'm going to give you another 2 weeks. What would you change about your map?
Probably quite a bit. I think when you go through the apartment, I'd probably put that floor up so the player drops down into the underpass area. Mm-hmm. I mean, probably still put some retreating space on the lower level, but having so much to retreat into means that they don't actually get to explore the under the overpass area, and I think you lose some of the fun from that area.
Okay.
The other thing I'd probably change is I'd probably destroy the bridge, so have a load of debris from where the crash site is.
Okay. And
have that leading to where the combine advisor is.
Okay. All right. Darren, what were your thoughts about the
I thought this one had some interesting combat in it. There was a moment, it was before you got to the bottom of the overpass, you're kind of going through some apartment areas, and there's just one room that I remember very distinctly, where you walk in and there's just a couple of combined soldiers on the opposite side of the room, and they start shooting you. It's all very kind of, you know, standard. Mm-hmm. And then just as you, about a couple of seconds after you get into a fight with them, a zombie busts down the door and just walks into the room. And you're not sure, like, should I shoot him? Should I leave him? And there's like this random element of, is he going to attack the combine? Is he going to attack me? And it really made me think about the situation, which I thought was really, really cool. In the end, I think I just blew his face off with a shotgun and then just carried on.
Did the other two combines stop shooting you and shoot him?
You know, I can't remember. They might have kind of repositioned a bit. I really can't remember. But the idea of introducing a random element into what is a very standard situation is something I think is really, really cool and has got a lot of legs. Mm. Something you could reuse over and over again, just in different scenarios. I think that bit was really cool. The rest of the map I thought was a little bit cramped. The overpass when you're on top, lobbing the mines at the APC. I thought it was very hard to move around because it was just very tight. I was getting caught on cars and things like that. It's a cool idea, though. I've seen it in other maps. What was it? It was a Manamai map, I think. Was it?
Yeah, Overflow, I think. It
had something similar. Yeah. And
okay.
And all the little turrets that came down were kind of annoying as well, but...
Yeah.
I hate turrets in any map.
Yeah, but they were distracting enough to sort of... I mean, one thing I did like about it is that it was a challenge. And it wasn't a challenge because it was hard. It was a challenge because it was interesting. And sometimes you can just put a lot of enemies in a map and say, "Whoa, that was challenging." But other times there's not that many enemies, but it's where they are and how you have to play it. I mean, I'm sorry, Joseph, but visually it wasn't very interesting.
No, that's fair. Yeah.
You know, especially at the beginning, I was like, okay, this looks very plain.
Yeah.
But I actually think the gameplay in the main section was quite interesting. And if somebody had sort of taken your map and rebuilt it, made it pretty, I think it would have made a huge difference. Sorry if that sounds too, like,
no, I mean,
you know, nasty.
I didn't end up doing the detail parts that I was intending to do near the end. But.
Okay. All right. Don, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was actually a pretty interesting twist or take on the city streets theme. You know, it was a pretty tight area overall, of course. So you really, chose... a limit creatively, maybe to work within your skills, let's say, and there was nothing wrong with that. I thought it turned out pretty good. I did have the same issues with you know, feeling really, really cramped on the overpass when you're pinned down by the tank.
Yeah.
So I would have liked to have had more space there to find cover and hide from the tank while, you know, lobbing the mines at him. But overall, I can't really complain much about this map. I like the little sort of voiceover, you know, mission briefing at the beginning. It was, you know, clear and a pretty nice setup for what you needed to do. So I quite like this map overall. And I thought the Darren's point about the Zombine kind of mixing things up in that one combat situation was also pretty clever. You know, Zombines are a pretty good choice for a random element because, you know, as soon as they whip out that grenade, it can really change the course of even a big battle if they're clustered around the Zombine at the moment.
Hmm. I love that kind of idea that suddenly your enemies can become your frenemies, as it were. Because as soon as he comes into, you know, the Zombine comes in, it's, you know, well, we've got to, you know, stop shooting at each other and shoot at him because he's more dangerous than both of us.
Yeah, I mean, originally when he came out, I did have him automatically take the grenade out. But I thought that was a bit too, partly it was a bit too harsh to some. Depending on where the player was. So I let the AI kind of handle that.
Okay. And then at the end, we die, don't we? Do I remember that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, I think Darren kind of survived because he started running straight away. But
okay, all right. Smarter than the rest of us, yeah. Press the button and run! Okay.
I was planning on having it so you activated the explosion. But then I couldn't actually have the bridge get destroyed in a good way. I couldn't really have the visual payoff that I would have wanted. So that's why I made it out. Having the car have a new function, may have been hard to teach as well.
All right. Okay, well, I thank you for entering. I hope you enter all of them from now on. So let's move on to Business District. Now, before we start Business District, I just want to make one quick point, and that is that both of the entries so far, which was Avenue Odessa and Beneath the Underpass, were probably more or less the same size. I don't know whether the guests will agree with me there, but if you look at how much of, you know, the area was used, it's probably about the same size. Would you both agree, or would you all agree?
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, I mean, they're both. Odessa Avenues are obviously more complex in visuals, but in actual layout, they're actually, they're both
about
quite
the same
simple.
Size. Yeah. And then this brings us on to Business District. Now, Business District, in my mind, is a tale of two mappers. It's not particularly true, but it almost seems as though it was made by two different people. And what I mean by that is the first half, which is where you get up to the elevator, is open and bland. I don't really want to use that word, but it's generic and it's not detailed. And it's quite fun to play. But then after you go up in the elevator, it's a whole world of Strider in your face. And this is the one that I had to cheat on at the end. And I really liked that second half, but I really didn't like the first half. So I'm kind of like torn between those two things. Don, you want to take over?
Yeah, real quick. Is this the one with two gunships at the end too?
Bloody well is.
I found this one really difficult for that, you know, for that exact reason. It was okay going up to, up to that point. I don't think I really noticed the sort of tale of two maps that you just pointed out, Philip. But I overall, remember this one for the challenge. And from watching Darren's stream, I guess, you didn't get both gunships at the same time like I did. And that
I think one bugged a bit. There was one caught in a building somewhere else in the map.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if they were supposed to come out at the same time or if it was one after the other, and I triggered them both, by running pretty far ahead. But whatever, that was too much at that point for me because I'd had a pretty tough battle with the Combine just before that with no time to breathe. and you find the rocket cache there, but it's, you know, it's only semi-protected from gunships. So this one was okay in my book, but it didn't quite stand up to the overall quality of the pack, I thought.
Okay. Darren?
Yeah, I have to agree. I don't know if this guy is like new to level design or just new to Half-Life 2, but the layout felt like someone just kind of building sections of map without really thinking about how they connect, which just meant they just kind of created a giant line with no kind of loopbacks or kind of looking into the map from different angles or kind of interesting connections. It's just kind of one big linear corridor that you walk down with interesting things to do on either side. But
yeah,
it was. I really didn't like the intro. That put a sour taste in my mouth instantly. Where you just kind of
okay, what, not having any weapons?
Well, no, just the screen fades in, and you're instantly being shot in the face by two Metro cops without any explanation or anything. Yeah, and so that put a sour taste in my mouth pretty much from the start. But some of the combat was fun. You know, fighting the Combine out in the streets was okay in places. The sniper in the in the overpass thing got me first time at the
there's no warning for that one.
Yeah, he just shot me in the back and I died.
Is that because you were running away from detonating a bomb in the last map? That's why.
Yeah, something else happened as well. Something, there was a bug I had. I had the lift.
The lift. It just now.
It sets down to its low position and you get stuck there, which was a shame.
I think in my first playthrough, I took the exploding grenade, you know, the flammable barrel.
Yeah.
Flammy, yeah, exactly. Somebody called it flammy. And I sort of was standing on it, and we both went through the lift, and I'm sort of standing on the crate, and I was able to jump, I think, because I just played it just now before we started the podcast, and I had to replay that section, but I didn't replay it when I initially played it, so I must have been really lucky.
Yeah, because it bugged out on me almost every time. I had to like jump out before it reset.
Yep.
I
haven't actually had it bug out on me, the lift.
I'm sorry, Joseph?
I haven't actually had that bug out on me.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I've played it a few times.
All right, well, it happened the both times I've played it, so...
I mean, I even bought a wooden box up, and the box fell through the bottom, but...
Okay, but you didn't?
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
All right, interesting.
But yeah,
but it was... Sorry.
The Strider fight, it was okay. I like the fact that you have to run around different areas to find ammo to take it down. That's always a good idea. Trying to think now. Yeah, the fight with the Combine soldiers just after the Strider was really brutal. I think I went into that with like 100 health and like 90 shield or armor, whatever you want to call it. And I think I left it with like 60 health and that's it.
Okay, well, I was down to like 2 or 3 at some points.
Yeah, it was.
Well, that's the area I had to go to God mode.
Yeah,
I just found it too hard.
Yeah, that was a huge difficulty spike in that area. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was.
And then the final combat with the gunships. Yeah, I had them one at a time, which again, I don't know if that's intended or not. But the thing that annoyed me about the final fight was it was a nice little arena, but the only place you really had cover from the gunship was in the arches and the pillars. I guess it was a bank or something.
It looked like that, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, the entire arena was useless. It would have been fine if you were just fighting people on the ground, like a couple of Combine soldiers or whatever, but against gunships, there was just no kind of cover to shelter you from the sky.
Well, there's a couple of places, but you had to go back to the arches to get the ammo.
Yeah, that's it.
So if there'd maybe have been a few rockets lying around, you might have stayed in the open and given yourself more chance. Yep. But you're right, I mean...
And then the constantly respawning Combine soldiers on the buildings, which just every now and then they'll just come along and plink you for a couple of health before you shoot them. But that got really annoying after a while.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like some clown cars up the top there, just Combine soldiers piling out of them.
Yeah, true. Okay, so for me, that was the most difficult one. But it certainly wasn't a bad entry, but it was just too... It wasn't balanced, if we could maybe say that.
Yeah.
All right. And then that moves us on to El Bucle, not El Buckle or Buckley or El Bucle, which had new content. I think this is probably the first one in a while. No, it didn't. Oh, maybe I've got them in the wrong order, actually. Eye on the City has the new content.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've listed them in a wrong
as well
order.
In my review.
Okay, yeah. So
any new content.
Okay. Yeah, I've got them listed as in the voting, which is what I'm reading from, but the images are different. Okay, so the next one is El Bucle, which was the train station start. And Alex is used quite nicely there. And you sort of get outside. And I suppose you're told quite well what you've got to do. You know, you've got to get this force field down and you can see where the energy ball is. But it took me a long time to figure out that I could just go around the back of the energy ball.
Yeah, I had that problem as well. I had the gravity gun. I just figured you'd shoot it and it would open, you know.
Yeah, but basically, I mean, it's quite clear, I suppose, or it's obvious when you walk down that way, but there's nothing to sort of tell you you should look there.
I was just looking for a puzzle, like, you know, stacking crates or whatever it was to get over the force field. I wasn't just looking for a door. That just seems too simple.
Yeah, and then, I mean, it's an interesting view outside. It's very white and you've got that beautiful red cross building thing. I'd already smashed it because I'd used the rocket launcher to kill some of the two civilian protection at the top, so the effect that when the gunship went through it was less dramatic as it could have been. But it's kind of like quite nice. You're inside the station, you're out in the open, and then you're back inside the station. Very clear what you've got to do. Yeah, I'm okay with that. Joseph?
I mean, as in, I actually have trouble with the force field because I don't think I actually noticed the force field. I just went wandering and stumbled upon the ball generator.
Okay.
But yeah, I thought it was good. It was a nice arena. I think the intro was maybe a bit too much tutorial. Uh-huh. I mean, there's the cable thing that you can. I mean, I think the yeah, the visual language there is actually strong enough to do without Alex telling you what to do.
Well, I suppose he just wanted to use Alex in an interesting way.
Yeah.
In his defence, but you're right. I mean, we don't need telling, but, you know, it's a fair point. Okay. And that building in the centre was, you know, quite nicely done. Is it difficult to do something like that big that's real inside a normal map, Darren?
I guess it really depends. Like, what if you're using like custom models and textures, you can do it really easily. You can just build something which looks really nice. The trouble is scale, I find, in the Source engine. If you're just using stock assets, trying to make something that which isn't in Half-Life 2, it can end up looking really strange if it's really big, because you're using textures which are designed to be used on something a lot smaller, and you have to kind of make them repeat a lot or stretch them out or, you know, do something crazy like that. But I thought, is it Rob Martins that did this one? I think it was, wasn't it? Yeah. I think he did a good job with the skyscrapers. I thought it looked quite nice.
I really like the look of...
Go ahead. Sorry, Don, go.
I said I really like the look of the white fog or the haze over the map. It's rare to see. We haven't really seen that much in the Source engine, as far as I can remember, at least in the standard games. So this map, to me, had a unique look. A lot brighter than most, you know, say the episode one setting of Avenue Odessa, the first map here, you know, it was kind of dark and red. This one's like, you know, daytime, bright, hazy, really gives it a unique feel. And I thought the setup, was a little heavy handed, but he had the voice lines from Alex available and, you know, used them pretty well. So I can't really complain about that. So overall, I thought this was a pretty solid entry.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of people, well, more than a couple, maybe seven, said it was their favourite entry.
Yeah.
I had most fun with this one, I think so.
Okay, all right. So that then brings us on to the one I thought we was going to bring us on to, which was Eye on the City. Yeah. The reason that I got them in the wrong order is because the map is actually called City Eye. And mappers have got this terrible habit of naming the map differently from the file, and that really confuses me. But anyway, that's my fault. So we've got this new content. We've got this, like, laser beam. But the first part of the map is frustrating as heck, because you've got this stealthy section where you get past the soldiers and you walk up into the room and, oh, crap, you need to get some blocks. Oh, but wait, it's not just one block, it's two blocks. So I found that really, really annoying. Did anybody else find that annoying?
I felt I kind of missed the point of stealth in games. Cause, I mean, or at least it's quite a cynical view of stealth in games. It's just crouch and walk behind someone.
Yeah.
I mean, if maybe they had a patrol pattern, I think maybe that would make it a bit more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a fair point. I mean, I don't really like stealth, but you're right. If there had been that aspect to it, stealth lovers would have probably enjoyed it more.
Yeah, but I mean, making a custom NPC is probably where most of the work went into this one, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, what did you think of that sort of final section? I found it just a little too open.
Yeah, you know? I found it. There's some weird hit detection going on with the beam at the far distance. It was like it would shoot through your cover and hit you anyway.
Kind of
frustrating. But I love the fact that when you get into its line of sight, it'll do a charge up animation and then start firing. That's really cool because it gives you a chance to move from cover to cover, and you have some anticipation of the attack coming your way, which is really critical, I think, with puzzles like this. And I like the presentation of it as well. Like, you can't miss it. You turn the corner and there's this giant, it almost looks like a plant.
A triffid.
Yeah, exactly, a triffid, yeah.
No, you're right. I think it's interesting to compare this with Raining Down Hell, because in many ways they've got a very similar structure. Yeah. There's something that is, you know, giving a lot of problems to people, but one, you face it head on and you have to run and charge, but the other one, it's like you get a notion of it right at the beginning, which we'll come on to. And I think that this might have benefited from that. If the first thing we'd seen is like this thing firing at us, but we ran across an alley and then we didn't see it until right at the end, that would have been like a really nice way of foreshadowing it, I think. Yeah. John?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're sort of told at the beginning via text, if I remember right, that your mission is to destroy the Overwatch Eye or something like that. And I think it would have been a great tie-in to let you see it in action, you know, maybe safely, you know, through glass or something like that. It would have been a nice way to preview essentially what the map is about, and then let you go through the cinder block puzzle bit, which actually didn't annoy me that much. You know, having played Thief and Thief 2 just a couple months ago, it was still sort of, you know, my habit to to crouch and move behind people. But the nice thing about it, it didn't go on too long. Yes, it was frustrating that you realized you needed two cinder blocks and not one, but it wasn't, 20 minutes long. And the real challenge came in when you faced the Eye here.
Okay. All right, Joe?
I think it was definitely the Eye was a centerpiece for the whole map.
Did you enjoy playing against it though?
I mean, if you know that it doesn't quite work as it's supposed to, then yeah, you can work around that. And there's a whole house of health out to the side, which kind of compensates for that a bit.
Yeah, there's plenty of health.
Yeah.
I mean, it was difficult. There's no doubt about it. But you've got plenty of health.
Yeah.
So I mean, it was quite well balanced. Yes, you got shot in the bum when you were standing behind something and you thought you were safe. But as you say, once you figured that out, you just got even lower. But if you've seen my live stream, you'll see that I managed to get really lucky at the end. I managed to crouch down and still had full view of it, but it didn't fire at me.
All right.
So I was super lucky. Did you see that, Darren?
No, I missed that one. I didn't want to watch it and spoil myself.
No, I understand. Okay. All right, and then on to the next level, which is called Memory Lane. Now, why don't you start, Don? I'll be the last on this one, I think.
Yeah, I thought this was another interesting take on City Streets. I don't remember who did this. Was it
David Newell?
Yeah, who's entered a handful of your competitions before, I think. And,
correct. Yeah.
This I thought was a nice change of pace. I've said it before, I think, and I think the your competitions give a nice avenue for mappers to kind of explore different ideas and not, you know, say just make you versus the Combine Army map. I can't say it quite worked out perfectly in this case. I thought it almost tipped, although it was, you know, more of a non-combative map, the combat that you did face was really long odds. I mean, there were just tons of zombies in that one building, and
yeah,
the infinite Metro cops, you know, kind of got annoying after a while too. So I think that could have been tuned a little better, but you're basically going around and finding, I don't know, notes or memories, let's say. It's not really clear what is going on. And I think it might have been Jason Gimba in the comments mentioned that the notes kind of make you like the bad guy in the story that's being sort of unfolding through the text. And that can tend to frustrate the player a little bit. So I think this could have used some tuning, but I had a good time in it too.
Yeah, me too. Joseph?
Generally this kind of map isn't my cup of tea, but yeah, I think it was quite well done. I quite like the, the corridor and stairwell.
Yeah, the doors and the corridors, they were cool.
Yeah, and also I thought the sort of the story about the guy burning in the vents was quite well done. But I wasn't really sure how, wasn't a fan of the text on the screen, and wasn't so much a fan of the combat in this. I didn't feel it fit in well with the theme.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Darren, you want to take over before I rip?
I didn't like this one, unfortunately. I do agree with Don's point, though, that it's really interesting to see maps like this, where they're exploring something different. I think Voic did the same kind of thing in RTSL, Bill. Yeah, I'll get it right one day. With her map there. Just in terms of sheer like gameplay, the combat was not very good at all. The only point I really, really enjoyed the combat was just fighting in that crowded room full of zombies at the end. I just thought that was quite fun. I was running around corners, just sprinting everywhere, just with my shotgun, barely holding everything off. That was actually quite intense. I quite enjoyed that. And the other part I really enjoyed was the part with the doors, which I thought was really clever.
It was.
Very, very seamless. And a great presentation of it as well. But I just didn't give a crap about the story, if I'm honest. I really didn't. Like, as soon as I saw the text come up on the screen, like, blah, 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 you are blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, no, here we go.
Yeah. It's interesting because this map, to me, I really enjoyed this map, but there are lots of things that I didn't like about it. And that's often the case with me, that if I enjoy something, then I've got more negative things to say about it than I would for things that I didn't enjoy. I agree about the text. There's too much text. I don't like text. I haven't got time to read text because I'm running around. And I'm going to trip over trying to read text. So I'd have liked a little bit of voice acting. If we'd have just had maybe a girl's voice whispering in one side of your ear, you know, as if it was like your voices, that might have been cool. The combat, I could have probably taken away 60%, even maybe 75%. And I'd have still enjoyed this map as much as I did. Because it was the little touches for me. That cart rolling down the hill at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that section. Because suddenly I was like, okay, is that to distract me? Am I supposed to focus on that and then get caught from behind? And you know, we had this fog coming down and all of those kind of things. You're probably right. The story itself wasn't that interesting, but it was just the fact that it was a bit different. And one last thing I want to say is that if we were to look at how this map looked, it didn't look that good. But somehow David managed to take our focus away on what it looked like and put it more on what was happening and what we were doing.
Yeah, you're always kind of looking for something. You know, when you sort of start off at the bottom of the hill, you're sort of given a mission, like, you know, meet me at the coffee shop or something like that. So you're making your way up the hill, you know, looking for where the coffee shop is or looking where the hospital is, for example. So that might take your focus off sort of the environment as a whole.
Yeah, and I really like the reuse of the street as well. So, you know, you constantly rewind back to the start and it would say, okay, now you have a different thing to go and do. And because you've been through the environment before, you know oh, I know where the bar is. I know where the hospital is. I'm going to go there straight away. It gives you that feeling of mastery over the level. And the interesting thing is with the text is that my favorite Half-Life 2 mod of all time is Minerva, which is another text-heavy... Well, it's not text-heavy, but when it does spew text at you, it's a lot of it at once.
Yeah.
But the thing that about Minerva is that the text was really interesting to read. It was written in an interesting style, and it had kind of direct relevance to the level instantly. Whereas in this mod, it was like, go to the coffee shop and find someone because... reasons. it didn't feel as connected to the world as it does in Minerva.
And it's not, it's in the top left as well.
And
I actually think that makes a difference. I really do. You know, just not sticking it right in front of me, it kind of says to you, look, you can read me if you want to, but if you don't want to, you might lose something, but I'm not going to force you to read me. And then that brings us on which is probably going to be the winner. The voting hasn't finished, but it's highly unlikely that anybody's going to overtake it. And that's Raining Down Hell. So why don't you start us with that one, Darren?
Sure. So, yeah, this one got my vote. It's absolutely beautiful. As with pretty much all of Marnamai's maps, he's a brush master for sure. And the thing I really liked about this map is that you're given an objective right at the start, and the objective has relevance instantly, i.e. the suppression device is suppressing you right from the very start. And it's really well used as well, because there's a lot of open space in the map with barely any cover. Like, you have these long streets and the canal way that you start in as well. It makes those spaces interesting, because you can't just sit around in them and walk forwards. You have to actually dodge around the beams and find overhead cover and all that kind of stuff. So I really like that, and just the way that the pace of the gameplay changes so frequently keeps it interesting. So you're in a long street with a long gun battle against Metro Cops, and then you're inside in close quarters combat fighting against, you know, zombies and Metro Cops, and then you go back outside and there's a big plaza and you have like a bit of a standoff, and then you're back inside again. It never really got dull.
Yeah, and you're on top of the buildings, and you're in that kind of wooden area just before you turn off the suppression device, and it does keep changing.
There were a couple of areas where I thought it was a little bit annoying, like the very first big combined barricade you get to when you come up or out of the canal. You've got a couple of Metro Cops on top of it shooting at you, and there's a turret around the side somewhere. That bit was really difficult. And it got
it's got hopper mines as well, I think.
Yeah. It got kind of annoying being constantly like plinked by the Metro Cops up on the barricades. They were really hard to shoot. You could only really see their heads. And you had to kind of work your way up there. That bit I found a little bit frustrating. But aside from that, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Joseph?
Yeah, I think it's probably objectively the best map. Most detail and most complex route while being relatively easy to follow. I don't really have any complaints about it.
Did it get your vote?
No, I think I gave the vote to L. Buckle or whatever it was called.
Buckley.
No, I said Buckle as well.
Yeah, me too.
Obviously, I'm not very sophisticated.
Yeah, don't worry. Okay, Don?
Yeah, I really liked what I saw of this map. The problem I had is consistent crashes of Half-Life 2 right at the footbridge. You're sort of crossing this bridge between buildings up high. I think it's right directly in one of your screenshots, Philip. And right around that section, it's sometimes before in the sort of the ruined building, and sometimes after in sort of that... that attic area that that really is modeled after the section in the beginning of Half-Life 2 when you're kind of on the run from the Metro Cops. And it wasn't really even traceable crashes. In other words, Episode 2 just exited like that, and I got no warning, no pop-up. The only warning I would get is sometimes the enemies would disappear, like go invisible right in front of my eyes, and then a second later I would be back at the desktop. And I've tried You know, verifying my cache. I haven't tried deleting episode 2 and reinstalling that. That's probably been my next, my next step. But it's frustrating. I gave it about 20 tries, and every time, I couldn't get past it. So I had to watch the rest on Darren's YouTube channel. But the combat up to that point and everything, the setup was great. And detail was great. Just sort of echoing what these guys have said before me. It was a great layout, and I love the use of the suppression beam. It's something we don't often see, and thankfully has not been overused in Half-Life 2. I think that's the only section you see it in, really, is that open area in front of the Nexus. The Nexus, right? Near the end of Half-Life 2. So it hasn't been overused, and I thought it's a good way to keep the player moving. But still giving him fair warning of, you know, where the shot's going to be with that little sort of beam of sunlight before the, you know, suppression comes down to you.
Yeah, and it can be used in very large open areas because you don't have to have line of sight with the enemy.
Yeah.
You know, this thing's just like fires up in the air and then it comes back down, and you know, so that was kind of cool. Maybe I'll send you a save just after that area to see what happens.
Yeah, I'm going to fiddle with it a little more and see if I can get through it. But yeah, it was a little disappointing. I can't fault the map for it because it doesn't seem like other people have been having this problem. So it hasn't happened to me in any other map that I've played. In
memory. Okay. All right. Okay. And the ending was pretty cool. You got like to fight some hunters and two striders, and there is a feeling of I did well to win.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's like a payoff in that regard as well.
Yeah, and I like how the strike. Well, I don't know. Are we doing spoilers? Or?
Yeah. If do spoilers. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
All
right. I like how the strider actually blows up the rocket cache. One of the rocket caches.
True. It's a good point.
And yeah, that kind of mixes things up a bit.
Another thing I really liked was if you find one of the little side areas in the apartments, there's a mirror propped up against the wall, like a broken mirror.
Oh, yeah.
And it's you can see a barred door in the mirror, so you can't access it from where you are. But if you throw a grenade at this mirror, bounce it off, and break the wooden boards, you can open the door and get some supplies. I thought that was just really, really cool.
Okay, I don't remember that. Yeah. Well spotted.
I can't remember where it was in the map, but it was awesome when I saw it. I was like, wow.
Yeah. I know
it only took you about 10 tries, Darren.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took a long time for me to actually get the grenade at the right angle to break the door, but it was a really cool idea.
Yeah, I noticed the box of grenades, but I didn't figure out what it was for without the puzzle.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, why don't you carry on, Joseph, and take us into the current, or is it this, or this current predicament?
I think it's possibly one of the newer authors in this competition. So, not best visual quality. I mean, not that my maps are best in that regard anyway. But yeah, I found the layout quite interesting. It's sort of a Metroidvania layout where you get the crowbar, then you can progress through the wooden bit, and then you get the gravity gun, you can progress past the cars.
Yep.
And yeah, I mean, there's quite a bit of leveling there, quite a bit of map to go through.
Yeah, there were. The problem was, though, that it is possible to finish the map in like 20 seconds.
Yeah.
You can take the two crates that you have to move to turn on the power, and you can stack them, and you can jump over the fence and just go right to the end of the map.
The never-ending level design nightmare.
Yes. Because
it pops.
Billet armor. Yes. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But, of course, we've got 17 days, or you've got 17 days. I don't expect every map to have been tested to its limits. And as Joseph has mentioned, this is probably a newer mapper, or a mapper that hasn't entered any one of the competitions before. So he's not really sure what necessarily was expected. But there were elements. You were right. You sort of get the crowbar and you need to use it immediately. And you get the gravity gun and you need to use that. And that's always nice. Shows that there's some thought behind it. Some areas were quite fun to play. There was an area that I'm looking at now, which has got like a couple of cars or three cars, and you've got like the zombies running around, and you could either jump down and fight it out or do what I did, which is stand at the top and shoot them from the top. So there's a couple of interesting areas. Don?
Yeah, I really like the sort of the looping method that you have to take sort of through this level. You know, you kind of, as Joseph mentioned, I think you kind of see the area where you wish you had the gravity gun to move this car out of the way, for example. And then later on, of course, you have it. So that's a new path to progress through. I think the complaint I would have about this map is that there's nothing really that interesting that's sort of drawing you through the level, sort of, you know, there's no, I think maybe what would have been nice is maybe a clear goal or a target you needed to get to that you could see a couple times through the map. And so you knew that was your final destination, for example. Kind of like, you know, Half-Life 2 uses the Citadel, for example. Not to say that you would use the Citadel here, but something visually attractive that you sort of use as an object to pull you through the level. And I think that's what this was missing. Otherwise, it was pretty well pulled off. I can't say it was the most attractive level, but I really liked some of the combat situations. And I especially liked the face-off with the, I think it was three hunters near the end. Yeah. Mm. When you're not that well armed. So I ended up using the gravity gun on cars to kind of push the cars around into the hunters, which was another interesting sort of twist on, you know, some common ideas. Of course, you've been using the gravity gun to push things around, but maybe not with hunters so much. So I thought that was a clever setup, at least.
Yeah, it's fair enough. And that brings us on to Trolleying Times, or as it's been called, Trolling Times.
Trolling Time, yeah.
All right, now, if Tony's listening, please don't take it personally, but a lot of people find your maps frustrating, and you know why now, because we've discussed it, and hopefully that when you make some more maps, those little elements will make a huge difference. I like your maps. I do. I enjoy playing them. And as I mentioned in my review, I somehow get your enthusiasm through the map. I don't know how that's possible, but I kind of get it. But there were a couple of times when I'm running around and I'm thinking, what the head crab am I supposed to be doing here? And I'm sure we've all experienced that.
Yeah.
So, Darren, yeah, you take it, baby.
So, yeah, this it's always interesting playing a Starman map, because I instantly know it's a Starman map without even looking at the author or anything, because the visual language is consistent throughout all of his maps. So in all of his maps, all the crates look different. And if you break them, there's cool stuff in them, like normal crates, but they just look different to the Half-Life 2 crates. And generally, crates are not breakable in his map for some reason. Padlocks are unbreakable for some reason. All this stuff, yeah, it's frustrating, because this map was quite fun, and it spawned a brilliant image, the oppression train, which Will Gallagher drew.
Okay.
I think someone posted it in your
comments somebody did. Somewhere. I don't know.
It's brilliant. You should go and have a look if you haven't seen it, listeners. It's really good. But that image was spawned from this map, where Conwen soldiers are riding the trams to come and get you. But yeah, the ideas behind the map are great. So I've escaped from an apartment, work your way around the town to escape. But yeah, just the constant fighting against the broken visual language is just, oh, it's so frustrating. And it's in all of his maps, just like crazy little things which you'll never notice, or things which just don't work the way they should, or just don't speak to the player in any way at all.
I really have to second that idea. I find the same exact frustrations you do, Darren. It's you know, Half-Life 2 and the episodes do quite a good job of setting you up visually and set up your expectations as a player. Yeah. That if there's a padlock, you'll be able to break it if you have a crowbar or a gun or the gravity gun even. And vents that look a certain way, breakable vents that look a certain way, where you can sort of see through and maybe some of the slats are broken. Yeah. And floor grates that you can break through. And that was my my big sticking point.
Oh god, the floor grate.
That one floor grate that looks like a piece of metal or something like that, but it's actually, I don't think it was breakable, but it was liftable, like with the gravity gun, for example. I was, wandering around the map for 10 minutes, with the Strider in the streets, no less, trying to find out where to go, and it was just a simple changed texture or different model for that floor grate would have gone a long way toward, easing my frustration with this map. And I generally have the same reaction. I think he's a solid mapper. I do enjoy his maps, but he breaks our expectations as a Half-Life 2 player a lot, and that leads to frustration pretty quickly.
Joseph?
He definitely has a lot of imagination. Sort of feel like he should maybe restrict it to gameplay rather than how the mechanics should work. But this is one I didn't actually finish because I actually got to the sewers with little trouble, but then invisible steam started burning me and I couldn't figure out what I was supposed to do.
And then there were two padlocks right near there, and I spent a good little while trying to break those padlocks.
If they're open in the Blazio's maps, then you can break them. If they're closed, then you can't. I figured that out. Yeah. I actually found the secret area before I found the actual path, which is kind of a bad sign.
True. It'd be quite interesting to get somebody who's not experienced in Half-Life and watch them play one of his maps, because we've got a lot of baggage. We call it intuitive or we call it visual language, but those are things that we've learned. From playing Half-Life 2. And I wonder if somebody would come along who's fairly experienced in FPSs but hasn't played Half-Life 2, if we gave them his map, I wonder how they would get on. Would they complain as much as we do? Perhaps not.
Yeah, well, the thing is that even if you do that, there's still areas which just defy explanation. Like the floor grate is the perfect example. It's just not picked out at all. It just looks like a grate on the floor. There's nothing picked out about it. So I think that would give a lot of people trouble.
Yeah, if there was like a spotlight over it, the rest of the room was a little bit dark, that might be enough even.
So many things you can do, because the entire Half-Life 2 game is always teaching you how to interact with the environment. Like right from the very start, like you get off the train, what happens? You see some stuff blowing across the floor. Oh, can I pick it up? Yes, I can. Cool, stuff can move around. What do you do next? You push through the gate and you realize, okay, things move. I can move through things if they're movable. And then you've got like the classic pick up that can thing with the Metro Cop. Oh, cool. I can pick up objects and throw them around. It's all teaching you like how the game works and what the visual language is. Like when you first get the crowbar, the first thing you do with it is knock down some wooden planks to get through that gate after speaking to Barney. It's all teaching you how the game works and what items can work with what things are interactive, what things aren't. And that lets you as a level designer build complex gameplay that the players can understand and relate to and kind of look at something and say, I understand how this works. Yeah. And that's where Tony goes wrong, I think, is that he changes all of that without giving any explanation.
Yes, that's true. But there's a other side of the coin, which is that every time we pick up a gravity gun, we know that there's going to be something coming that requires the gravity gun.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're 100% right. I'm definitely not disagreeing with you, but it can, after a while, it can get a little bit boring, or at least it can get, too frustrating. I mean, we were talking about raining down hell, and when you see a huge crate with grenades in there, okay, there's a clue that something's going to happen. Maybe I'm being too hard. Maybe, I don't know. How do you guys feel about it? Don, do you think I'm too unfair?
Yeah, I do. as we're sort of dancing around, it's player expectation. And yes, it does come from, playing Half-Life 2 and all the mods and add-ons. But it's a choice he makes as a designer, and like I said, I don't want to harp on it too much because I did really enjoy this map, the oppression train and whatnot, but the combat was solid. Although, actually, the one complaint I did have was it's possible to get permanently stuck. So once you go down to the sewers, open the door, get all the way back up to the top, and back to the streets, I was running away from the Strider and actually took the same path. I actually went down into that corner, fell down the hole that I had just removed the grate from, and the door didn't open again, the door with the orange wheel. So okay. I was permanently stuck down. It's not a huge complaint. It happens, you know, in a 17-day map without much playtesting, for example. But so that was kind of a nitpick I had. But otherwise, you know, I enjoyed this map. He does break the conventions of Half-Life, which I find frustrating. But as Darren as sort of alluded to, if you know it's a Tony DiBlasio map, you kind of get in his mindset. And that's, it's a little less frustrating once you've played some of his maps. But I think he could go a long way toward correcting that. And I think he's in the comments on this competition on your site, Philip. And I think he's beginning to come around and maybe listen to some of these critiques that we've been leveling at his maps. So that's encouraging.
Yeah, I agree. But the idea of a combined trolley drive-by was kind of cool, wasn't it?
They even combined are restricted to public transport.
Yeah, but it could have been extended. You could have had this like area where, you know, it's been done before with the trams in Half-Life, or at least Opposing Force, but you could have taken that a little bit further. It would have been quite fun. All right, so that brings us to the end. So we've got 9 interesting, varied, challenging, beautiful maps. I'm incredibly pleased with the result. As has been mentioned already, we've got different ways of looking at something. It wasn't just one idea. Strider in the street, lots of combine, rocket launcher, bing bang bosh. No, there was, you know, a little bit more imagination involved, and that's always nice to see. Any final words, Joseph?
I think that this and Ravenholm show that when it comes to competitions, people seem to back the idea of sort of recreating Half-Life areas just creating locations. So I think it's quite good to see so many entries. So much enthusiasm.
So you're agreeing with the idea of location-based?
It definitely seems to be successful. I mean, I would quite like to see the more obscure ones, even if it is less entries. But yeah, I definitely think they're more popular.
All right, okay, Darren.
Yeah, this was a really varied competition. I enjoyed most of the maps in it, despite my reservations about some of them. I was, again, like I said at the beginning, I was very surprised that the maps were so varied, because I couldn't think of anything to do myself. So I'm glad other people are smarter than I am. And I'm looking forward to more, please.
Okay, good. Don?
Yeah, overall, this is another solid, mapping competition, or mapping challenge, let's say, run by you, Philip. I really like the variety of maps, as Darren mentioned, and I like that a couple of the maps really kind of thought outside the box, you know, with the memories, you know, maybe didn't quite work, but we had the eye over the city. That was a sort of a new twist on a sort of a familiar enemy, that type of thing, that really showed mappers creativity. And I think this is a great avenue. So really look forward to the next one.
Good. My final thoughts are, I think we got 2 entries from people who'd never entered before. And that's a big, you know, I'm pleased about that.
Yeah.
The last map had, 1 entry from somebody else that was new, so that's always nice. Even if they don't make fantastic maps, if it encourages them and gets them to do something, I'm like sort of pleased with that.
Yeah, that's great to see.
It's always good. I'd like to run like a new mapper competition, but this is the internet and you never know, you might get somebody who,
yeah, I might re-enter.
You know, who's been doing it for 10 years and just pretends that they're new. And how do you go against that? You know, but it would be nice to have some kind of new mapper challenges or something. I don't know. Maybe I'll ponder that and perhaps have something we could do. So thanks to all of you for joining me today. Had a good chat. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks.
And thanks to all the mappers who entered the competition. If you're listening, or if you're listening to somebody who has listened, thank you very much. And remember, finishing Half-Life is just the beginning. So goodbye.
Bye.
See ya.
See ya.
Remember, finishing Half-Life is just the beginning. RunThinkShootLive.com lists and reviews single-player maps and mods from the Half-Life series of games.